Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. This week marks the fifth anniversary of the Lehman Brothers collapse, the biggest bankruptcy in American history that helped trigger the greatest economic crisis in this country since the Great Depression. So where are we now? Have we made adequate economic gains? Have we taken steps to prevent this from happening again? In a speech earlier this week, President Obama gave a blistering warning to congressional Republicans, saying it would be the height of irresponsibility for lawmakers to cause another economic crisis just half a decade after the collapse of the nation's financial system. Those comments coming as Congress is set to vote on the debt ceiling. Joining us today to talk about what led to the crisis 5 years ago, where we are now, and what the American people think about where the economy is now, we'll have two guests, Matt Taibbi, contributing editor for Rolling Stone and author of Griftopia, Bubble Machines, Vampire Squids, and the Long Con That Is Breaking America. And later in this hour, Carol Doherty from the Pew Research Center. We welcome your phone calls as you reflect on what happened 5 years ago this week. Do you think that people were punished for what happened? Did anybody ever go to jail? Matt wrote a pretty scathing piece about this a couple of years ago. We'll ask him about that. Do you worry most, as a Pew Research Center for the People and the Press recently did a survey of Americans, finding that really it's jobs that people are most worried about in this economy? Has enough been done to stimulate the economy, to create more jobs? And what do you think about the next year? Do you feel that the economy is on the right road, or are you worried? Are you troubled about it? The policies that have been put in place, are they sufficient to keep another collapse from happening? 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page, if you'd like to leave a message there, is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Matt Taibbi, hello. Thanks very much for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
5 years ago, this great economic collapse. What are your thoughts about what we've done in the subsequent 5 years to make sure this doesn't happen again?
Well, certainly the banking system is better capitalized than it was back then, and so the likelihood that we're going to have a collapse in the very near future is, I think everybody would agree, is smaller than it was back then. However, structurally and systemically, they not only didn't do a whole lot to fix the underlying problem, I think it's actually been made significantly worse. And the reason I say that is because, you know, the real problem 5 years ago is, and this was borne out particularly with Lehman Brothers, is that these companies had grown so large that we couldn't really allow corrupt or underperforming companies to go out of business without it causing major disruptions to the economy. And since that time, we not only haven't made these companies smaller, we've made them much, much bigger. Mm-hmm. Because the emergency response in 2008, except in the case of Lehman Brothers, which we let go out of business, was to take bad companies and merge them into even bigger companies. And so we have the too-big-to-fail problem is much, much more pronounced than it was before.
Mm-hmm. You wrote a piece, which I read again today, back on February 16th of 2011. You were speaking to a former Senate investigator to talk about all of this, and he said, language I can't repeat, but everything is blanked up and nobody goes to jail. That's your whole story right there. Hell, you don't even have to write the rest of it. Just write that, which, of course, you had to write a little bit more. But you do say this is the mantra of the financial crisis era, one that saw virtually every major bank and financial company on Wall Street embroiled in obscene criminal scandals that impoverished millions, collectively destroyed hundreds of billions, really trillions of dollars, and nobody went to jail. Nobody ever went to jail.
Right, and that's still true. And in fact, again, I would argue that that problem is more pronounced than it was even back when I wrote that article. In the intervening period, we've had two monstrous scandals on Wall Street. One of them involving the manipulation of world interest rates, which is, you know, the LIBOR scandal. This was a whole bunch of banks getting together and monkeying around with world interest rates. And then there was another one involving HSBC and money laundering. In that case, you know, you had one of Europe's largest banks admitting to laundering $880 million for a couple of Central and South American drug cartels. And in that case, you know, there were no arrests. Nobody did a day in jail. They took a financial settlement. But it was a settlement that was essentially the cost of doing business. It was far less than the bank made in profits in, let's say, 2 months. So in both the LIBOR case and in the HSBC case, you've seen the government unwilling to take action, not only against companies where they're not indicting companies anymore, but they're not even indicting individuals within companies who are committing these very serious crimes. And that's, you know, that's a serious problem. If the reason is, again, these companies are too big. They're afraid of disruption. So if the companies are too big to prosecute, then you have a very serious problem.
Mm-hmm. So is anybody other than Elizabeth Warren taking on this issue?
Yes, there are. I mean, there are a number of people in the Senate who are deeply concerned about this issue. It's everyone from Sherrod Brown in Ohio to Jeff Merkley out in Oregon to Carl Levin in Michigan. Mm. Bernie Sanders. I mean, and there are even a few Republicans who are kind of on board with this issue. I think, you know, sort of in a way that is kind of quaint, you know, patriotically, there are a number of members in both the House and the Senate who recognize that this too-big-to-fail situation, you know, no matter what the political benefits are of supporting these companies, it's just untenable. We can't allow companies that are too big to prosecute to exist, and there's a little bit of momentum to fixing this problem, I think.
Mm-hmm. The president earlier this week talked about the actions that his administration has taken since 2008 to encourage job creation, save the auto industry, regulate banking, and expand educational opportunities. We're going to talk later with the director of this Pew study that has come out. But the American public don't seem to think that a lot has been done to help, well, virtually no programs to help poor people, not too many programs to help small businesses, not too many people in middle class being helped, widespread agreement that the very wealthy among us have done very well since 2008. Is that a fair assessment? Has the administration really concentrated on the well-to-do, the Wall Street people, and the wealthy in this recovery?
Well, it's hard to place it exactly at the feet of the – well, yes, I think that is a fair assessment. Look, the statistics on this are – they couldn't be more clear. Where we remain in the longest employment slump that this country has had since 1945. Employment is still at 2% below pre-crisis levels, and if you're out there in a town somewhere outside of lower Manhattan, you know, in any ordinary town in America, whether it's, you know, Akron, Ohio, or Chelmsford, Massachusetts, or whatever, it's hard to get a job. It's harder to get a job now than it was before 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And so things are not better anywhere else in America. However, on Wall Street, the recovery has been extraordinarily robust. The stock market is booming again. Bonuses, which were obscene and outsized already before the crisis, they're now right back to where they were, if not even bigger in many cases than they were before. And there's even a new kind of discussion on Wall Street that it's not even the 1% that's doing better than it was back in 2008. It's really the top 0.001%. It's this extraordinarily tiny group of people that is making an enormous share of the bonuses and compensation in the financial services sector. And those people are doing great. They're doing better than ever. Mm-hmm. And it's everybody else who's kind of either treading water or doing worse. So we have an economy that, you know, it's stabilized, but it's more unequal.
Mm-hmm. Well, in order to have America fully functioning and for the wealthy to continue to making a lot, to be making a lot of money, and for everybody to be able to live, don't you have to have a pretty robust job economy? Don't you have to have a lot of jobs or creation of some jobs? And I'm just wondering a couple things. One, if that's become a partisan issue, and two, why it is that both parties, there was an initial stimulus, but there hasn't been much happening since then. And I think what you describe is pretty accurate. People are having a hard time finding jobs, and they say that they're having a hard time finding jobs. Why isn't Washington listening?
Well, I think the answer to that has a lot to do with my kind of cultural blindness. Since I started covering this issue, I periodically hear from people in D.C. who, I don't know, either work in the Treasury or someplace in the administration, and they say, you know, we've had to have people come in from big companies, big retail companies, come in and tell us that they expect there to be a lot of pain in the economy, that they expect spending on consumer goods to go down the next 6 months, that, you know, they're not expecting good sales figures. In other words, people in Washington need other business people to tell them how much pain is out there. They're just not clued into, you know, culturally, these are not the people they're clued into. Or mm-hmm. They're not listening to the people who are suffering. They're very, very tight with the people who are managing the economy. And so they're listening to a lot of advice on the macro level from people on Wall Street, from people who run, big consumer goods companies and that sort of thing. But I don't think they're really hearing what goes on in the rest of America, just because that's not who runs this country. Those people really aren't represented in the places where they make decisions about, let's say, the bailouts or, in the Fed, the quantitative easing programs, where they're cranking out $40 billion or $80 billion a month into the financial services
Wow.
sector. It's essentially a gigantic stimulus program for Wall Street, and a little tiny bit of it trickles into the rest of America, but there are plenty of ways that that Wall Street is able to kind of siphon off that money, and you can really attribute a lot of the growth and the recovery here in New York to just that largesse from the bailouts and from the Fed.
But Matt, don't all of those people who are out on Main Street vote?
They do, but here's the enormous problem with this issue with modern finance is that it's so incredibly complicated that it tends not to be covered very well on television. It's just very, very hard to do regular news about, you know, how does the Fed work? How does the quantitative easing program work? I mean, you have to explain what quantitative easing is to do that story, and that takes 6 minutes. You can't do it on television. Even for somebody like me, and when I'm trying to make it as succinct as possible, it takes me 5,000-6,000 words just to explain what the Fed's policy mm-hmm. is on things. And ordinary people are just not, they're just not tuned into what goes on, and they don't get it. And so, I know back from the days when I was just covering politics, like on the campaign trail, basically political reporters in this country, they're basically taught that if the stock market is going up, then that means the economy is doing well. And then, so that's how we cover the story. And so people are just not clued in, I think, to that dichotomy.
Yeah. You describe it. Some point you wrote about your covering of all of this, and you didn't really know a lot about what was going on either, but you learned it. So you've been one of the few reporters who's been able to explain it to the rest of us. But you had to learn it yourself.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was I can tell you, I had like a come to Jesus moment in in 2008. When, do you remember the whole drill baby drill thing that John McCain was doing?
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying, I was on the campaign trail with all those other reporters, And he was saying that we have to drill in the Gulf of Mexico because otherwise gas prices won't go down again. And all the reporters were kind of giving him a hard time on the plane, and we were all joking about it. And I kind of raised my hand and I said, you know, man, do any of us actually know why gas prices are going up? And nobody knew. I didn't know, you know, and we're all covering this stuff. And I realized, how can we possibly cover this story if we don't know, if we don't know anything, you know? So I was shamed at that point into starting to do some research. And, you know, you realize that it's a big can of worms. It's very complicated, and you have to do a lot of homework.
Matt Taibbi, who's certainly done a lot of homework on these financial issues, Rolling Stone's contributing editor, is our guest the first part of the show. We're looking at this week marking the fifth anniversary of the Lehman Brothers collapse and what has happened since then, the administration's policies that were put in place, whether or not there's been any significant change on Wall Street, bigger regulation of Wall Street so it wouldn't happen again, with a lot of crooks actually taking a whole lot of our money. Are you upset that nobody really ever was prosecuted for that? Do you think that enough regulations have been put in place to keep that from happening again? Do you think that we're on the right road for economic recovery? What do you make of the past 5 years after what was called almost the beginning of another depression? Have we made gains? And what do you make of Matt's point, which I think is really interesting, that the people in Washington aren't listening to the people on Main Street to find out that they're still having a fairly hard time finding work and finding enough money to feed families, but they're listening to the people who run companies and basing economic projections and policies on those voices instead of Americans' voices? Well, we'd like to hear from you. Matt's with us for a few more minutes, so get your calls in for him right away. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page, if you would like to go that direction, is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Later in the hour, Carol Doherty will join us, as Associate Director of the Pew Research Center for the People and the Press. And they've done a very interesting, and I might add somewhat disturbing, polling of the American people to find out what we think about the state of the economy, where it's going, and what our concerns are. And just to give you a preview, we say that our concerns, far and away over all the other issues, are jobs. To you in a moment, this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to some phone calls for Matt Taibbi. We start with Dan in Marinette. Hi, Dan.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I guess what I'd like Matt to comment on is, you mentioned how it seems that in this recovery, only Wall Street and in the financial sector of the economy seems to be doing extremely well. But remember, we had the stimulus program that was going to put shovel-ready jobs, you know, and projects out to, you know, kind of the rest of people and get construction jobs working. But there seemed to be such a hue and cry that came out against that I'm wondering if any kind of stimulus is now just sort of taboo, other than this kind of hidden stimulus that keeps Wall Street chugging along. And I'll take my comments off the air.
Thanks, Dan.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. That's a really good question. It's a great point, because it was incredible how rapid the public outcry was when they proposed an $800 million stimulus for ordinary people, when that was exactly the amount of the financial of just the TARP bailout, and probably a fifth to a tenth of the amount of the overall bailout. And that doesn't even include the $14 to $15 trillion in emergency lending that the Fed was giving to banks on Wall Street. So the stimulus for the rest of America was extremely small compared to the rescue package for this other sector of society. But politically, it's so much more radioactive to propose using government money to create jobs for regular people. And for some reason, this other kind of stimulus, like quantitative easing, is is not frowned upon, and it's kind of a conundrum. I personally don't have a good answer for why that is, but that's the case, and so it's an uphill climb, I think, for any politician who wants to propose the government route to putting people back to work.
It's kind of bizarre, isn't it? Because when we center on this Pew poll, overwhelmingly the respondents say that jobs are the number one concern. When are we even hearing people say we got to do something about jobs, about stimulating jobs? It's just hard to understand why it would be at all controversial.
Sure, and here's the other really weird part about that. So you have this Fed program, this quantitative easing program, and these other programs where they're pumping $40-80 billion a month into the economy. And the mandate there, the Fed's actual mandate, is full employment and stable interest rates. So their job, their entire purpose in putting that money into the economy is to create jobs.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're supposed to be doing. But they just have not been effective at it. You know, the problem is we've capitalized the banking system, and the banking system is not lending. And so for some reason, it's not controversial to capitalize the financial sector, but it is controversial to get to ask them to create jobs, and which is just strange.
Right. It is strange. Laura in Green Bay. Hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I've called on this issue before, but why are people, even relatively ordinary people, so averse to taxing the super rich at, let's say, Eisenhower levels?
That's a great question. Thank you, Laura. I don't know. I think it's interesting. They have they had this massive expenditure with the bailouts, and then there's this additional problem of, you know, we have an unstable financial sector where the threat of future collapse is huge, and I really think at the very least there should be some kind of transaction tax on Wall Street or something that builds up a kitty to protect America in case of future collapses, and that they have not even been able to secure that. So I don't know. I think there's the public thing in this country about, you know, taxing the wealthy means inhibiting growth, and I think a lot of people believe that implicitly, and that makes it politically unpopular.
Hmm. And we'll talk about that more the second hour of our show, Laura, if you want to stay tuned. One more phone call from Matt. We go to John in Hudson. Hi, John.
Yes. Hey, Matt. First of all, thanks for all your great writing. I think that you're the best thing that's happened to Rolling Stone in years. But
thank you very much.
Question is, you know, it seems that the Republican Party has really worked at splitting the middle class and trying to separate government employees from other employees and making sure that other middle class people are vilifying government employees. At the same time, they're really putting tons of money into the private business sector with tax breaks and stuff. Do you think that that's probably one of the reasons that we can't get middle class people to just sort of work together and try and make sure that we're putting money into middle class jobs and stuff?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, it's funny that you mentioned that. I have a story I'm working on right now that's about that. I think this entire issue about vilifying public workers, which of course he felt very keenly there in Wisconsin, a lot of it is in ways that I think are not entirely visible to most Americans. This is really not just about cutting benefits to ordinary workers, but it's also about blame. This is about assigning blame for what happened in the financial crisis and assigning blame for the bad economy. And the kind of new mantra is that this was caused by unsustainably high benefits to public workers, whereas the reality is, you know, public pension systems are broke because Wall Street sold them huge masses of toxic, fraudulent mortgage-backed securities, and that's why, you know, the pension system in this country is floundering. But they've created this other narrative that pits ordinary workers against workers in the private sector, and it's been extremely effective in deflecting blame from the financial sector. And it's an interesting phenomenon, and I think a lot of Americans would do well to pay more attention to what the actual causes of the problem are.
And Matt, when does that article come out?
The end of next week.
All right. Thank you so much for your work and for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having
me. Thanks, Matt. Matt Taibbi, Rolling Stone's contributing editor. We're this hour of the program looking at 5 years after the market crash, a little bit on why that happened with Matt. What do we think as Americans about the 5 years since then? What policies have been put in place to make us more economically secure? What do we think about our jobs? What do we think about government regulations? Have they gone a long way to make the economy grow, or have they not gone far enough, or have they gone, what direction have they gone, and who is best equipped to handle the future of the economy? Is it Republicans? Is it Democrats? How do independents respond to those questions? And what do we see as the future of the next year? Actually, the overall feeling was 5 years after the financial crisis, views of the national economy still remain rather negative. The Pew Research Center for the People and the Press just did a survey of Americans on all of these issues, and we're talking with Carol Doherty, who's associate director of the Pew Research Center for the People and the Press, to get an overview of what happened and to welcome more of your phone calls as well. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show. And Carol, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
We spent some time the first half hour talking about jobs. And what really is striking to me, and I somehow think that we're not getting this, or our elected representatives may not be getting this, that what you found in your poll is that jobs in this country are our number one concern.
Absolutely. And that's not new. We've been seeing that for quite a while now. The public's view has been pretty consistent on this. We ask about the economic issue that worries you most, and in our most recent survey, 40% say the job situation, 24% the deficit, 22% rising prices, and 10% problems with the financial markets. And so it's been consistent for the last 3-plus years.
Do we feel that things are getting better overall, and does that vary depending on what your political perspective is?
There's a lot of pessimism still out there. I think one of the striking things about this poll is that so many people do not see the economy as more secure than before the financial crisis in 2008. 63% say it's no more secure than it was then. And that's a pretty striking finding.
Yeah, it is. They do see the stock market as having rebounded most from the recession, but that doesn't seem to have trickled down.
Well, and all the data that we see in the last week about stagnant incomes, the public really picks up on that. 54% say household incomes have not recovered, not recovered at all from the recession. And I think this idea of stagnant incomes is really coming home to the public in a big way.
Mm-hmm. So what signs, when we look at the economy, where do we see some kind of improvement? We keep hearing, well, we're seeing slow but steady improvement.
Well, stock market and a little bit in real estate values, less so in jobs and incomes. And I think that's sort of the big picture of where we are right now as far as the public's concerned. And again, the public sometimes gets criticized for not following the details of public policy so closely. But in terms of the big picture, they have a pretty good grasp of what's going on.
What did you find when you asked whether or not the recession had a major impact on their lives and their finances?
Well, yeah, what's striking, again, and I think this gets to the pessimism, is that as fully a third of Americans say it had a major impact on their finances, and they've yet to recover. And economists tell us the recession ended long ago, but for a third of Americans, they have yet to recover. Some people say it has recovered. Others say that, they weren't affected a great deal. But for low-income people in particular, 44% say they've had it had a major impact and they're still yet to recover.
And they're saying that when they look at economic policies that have been put in place, I think almost everybody, but particularly those who are poor, but Republicans and Democrats would agree that there have been very few programs put in place to help poor people.
Well, that's true. That's one of the areas of partisan agreement on economic policy, financial regulation. Generally, you see wide partisan gaps, role of government in financial markets, things like that. But Republicans and Democrats generally agree that the policies put in place since the recession have done little to help the poor.
The outlook for the next year is not a very happy one, is it?
No, no. I mean, as many people say that the economy will be better a year from now is worse. Most expect it to kind of limp along the same way it's been. And there's really not a great deal of optimism for the future either.
When we look at how the economy is doing, who are people traditionally listening to? Are they looking at whether or not Wall Street has rebounded, and does that have some kind of impact on the average American's lives? Because there seems to be something off with all of this.
I think there's a little bit of a disconnect there that, you know, again, the public's aware of some of these market gains, but most people aren't directly affected by them. They may have a 401k, but it's not affecting their bottom line or their monthly budget. That's true for most Americans. So this isn't really helping their day-to-day situation a great deal.
Most people say that the large banks, the financial institutions, and wealthy people have done very well the last 5 years, or certainly
right.
have been helped.
Right. And again, you know, this is something for both parties to consider. That's you know, big majorities across the board say banks have benefited from these policies put in place since the recession, and so it's not purely a Democratic or Republican viewpoint.
Mm-hmm. Did you break people down by whether or not they're college educated when it comes to jobs? I'm trying to get at whether or not it's been easier the last 5 years for those who are more educated.
It is. You know, you see a big difference there with college graduates saying that the job market has recovered versus those with less education. Only fewer than half of those with a high school education say that it's recovered even partially.
Mm-hmm. And tell me who you talk to for this and how often you take these kinds of polls so we can get it in some recent history perspective.
Well, I mean, our average poll, monthly poll, is of 1,500 adults, and that's what this poll was. That's our standard poll, and we do this once a month. We also do smaller polls throughout the month, weekly polls. But this is a pretty big poll, and it's a good sample of Americans, and I think it really provides a good snapshot of what's going on.
Were you able to get at government regulations? We hear that term, but we don't necessarily know what that means. Government regulations that have been put in place as a result of the almost depression 5 years ago have been a good thing, a bad thing? How do people who are in small businesses or in different political perspectives look at this rather amorphous term of regulation?
Well, we know from prior polling that the financial regulation bill that was passed by Congress a couple of years ago really didn't resonate much with the public. We ask a more general question about the level of financial regulation of the markets. And you get, you know, 43% say it's gone too far, 49% say it's not gone far enough. But a huge partisan divide over that question, as you see with many aspects of the role of government, particularly in the economy. Republicans say too far, Democrats say not far enough.
Mm-hmm. Would you agree with what our earlier caller had to say, that we don't understand enough about this because the press simply sees this whole issue, financial regulation, what's happening with Wall Street, what's happening with companies merging with regulation, is simply too complicated to tell in a fairly short piece. And so nobody's very educated, including the people who are supposed to educate us.
I think there's something to that. The level of knowledge about some of these bills. I mean, not to get on another subject, but you see it about the health care bill that's going into effect in a couple of weeks with the health exchanges. Still a lot of confusion about that, and that's something that's going to be impacting many Americans' lives. And I think when the financial regulation bill passed, the public really didn't have a very good idea of what it did or what it was supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. And finally, let me ask you again about this number one finding that jobs are the major concern and what it takes. You've done this survey. There have been other surveys done. People in Washington don't seem to be hearing that, that there, again, is a real disconnect between what the concerns are and what kinds of actions, or in this case, no actions being taken to help people find jobs.
Well, I think you see the concerns are broadly shared about jobs, but the action that might be needed on this is very divisive. I mean, should there be more stimulus? That's something you get a huge partisan division on, and so therefore I think that's why, you know, that's sort of part of the gridlock in Washington today, even though there is a broad concern about jobs and the availability of them.
Mm-hmm. And did you break this down by income? I know that there's this figure of family incomes of $75,000 or more. Are people in that income group feeling a whole lot more optimistic?
Well, they're more optimistic, but you know, this has been a long, tough time for most American families. Unless you're really at the top, you've been batted around a little bit by this economy, and people still aren't feeling good, regardless of their incomes. Unless you're at the very high level of income.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Carol, very much for being with us to give us the report. Our guest, Carol Dougherty, Associate Director, Editorial Pew Research Center for People and the Press. He has played a leading role in developing the research agenda and is responsible for its editorial content, including this survey report. This report was just issued. You can get it online, and it's very interesting because it looks at so many different aspects of a slow economic recovery and whether or not we believe that we are recovering, and where you stand on that issue, be you somebody who's wealthy or middle class or poor, if you're in a small business, if you're an independent voter, or if you're a Republican or a Democrat, and what your thoughts are about the future. And honestly, they're kind of gloomy, what most people think, that things they're not great now, and they're not likely to get a whole lot better in the next year. So we will make you a part of the survey, the last part of our program today. I know this is an issue that a lot of people have thoughts on. As you look at the historic nature of this week, the fact that we almost entered another depression, what has happened in the last 5 years? Who has benefited from economic policies? Have there been good policies? Do we need more policies? What kinds of policies should they be? How can the country create more jobs? What's the role of Congress in creating more jobs? Let's hear from you, the last part of the show. Our phone number, and lines are open for you right now, is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. The lines are open for you. And let's hear what you have to say about all of this in a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to phone calls now, 800-486-8655. Diane in Harrison, hi.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
What I wanted to say was, and I think this applies to most politicians as well, the people that you're talking to, aside from the fact that many of them have short-term memory loss as to the state of the economy when President Obama took office, but many of these people really have no knowledge and education when it comes to economics, or they have such a far right perspective of the whole economic perspective that they're, I don't think they are giving this survey from an educated basis. When you look at how poor people are, I think if you would ask most people who say they're poor, many of them still will pay $100 for cable and $150 for Verizon, and that is something that just continues to, be part of their economic picture. So I just wanted to add that perspective, as most people have never made any adjustments to the economy either. And you're asking people questions where they don't have any real education as far as the, economy goes.
Well, in terms of how people are doing, what do you, when you look at that, whether or not we're on the right road, if you're seeing economic recovery, if you're making a little bit more money, if it's easier for you to make ends meet, how do you answer that, Diane?
I believe the economy has definitely picked up. I mean, we were on basically the edge of, you know, a cliff when President Obama took office, and I know that most of my acquaintances have definitely picked up as far as buying homes, cars, you know, just clothes. So I see that most people have increased their, you know, their spending, and even most stores would say the same thing. So, you know, there's going to be some people that are out of work, and that definitely is something that needs to be taken care of as far as, you know, applying for jobs. But I think that the economy has definitely picked up. I know that I spend a lot more.
Okay. Thanks, Diane, so much for your call.
Thank you.
David is next in Ironwood. Hello.
I have a few points. Economy didn't pick up for us because of the sequester. Both of me and my wife worked for Community Action, and their funds were cut, and they were spending a lot less. But another thing I want to point out is under Eisenhower, the rich got taxed a lot. So if they try to get more money out of me, it would just go to the government. But because the tax rates are so low, if they could get a dollar less, you know, make me work, they get to keep most of that. So there's a lot bigger incentive now than under Eisenhower to squeeze the worker. And another thing, under Obama, one of the first things he did was repeal the tax break for hiring foreigners. All the Republicans voted against that. How about a tax break for hiring U.S. workers? And those are my comments.
All right, David, thanks very much. We're going to do a historical perspective on tax rates, et cetera, hour two. It's not something you often hear. I think it'll be a really interesting hour. So I urge you to stay tuned. Lines are open, 800-486-8655. 5 years after almost the beginning of another depression, the collapse of Lehman Brothers, the unemployment and great upset that took place in the American economy. Where are we now? Have we corrected the problem? Who's benefiting? But most importantly, how are you doing? Pia is next. Hi, Pia.
Hi. I don't really think it's the lack of jobs that are ruining the economy. There is plenty of jobs, but the problem is they're not offering jobs that are full-time. It's all part-time jobs. The businesses that pay full-time workers have to offer insurance. And for them, that's costing money. So it's not the issue of finding a job. It's finding a job that's going to actually give you the income that you had when you had a full-time job, because you're going to have to get 2 to 3 part-time jobs just to make what you were making.
Mm-hmm. So when you look at the policies that have been put in place the last 5 years to strengthen the economy, do you see any that have helped the situation you just described?
I don't really think so. I mean, they're trying to improve the economy by offering the jobs. But like I said, it's not the full-time jobs that they're offering. It's the part-time jobs.
So you'd like the government to help create some full-time jobs in some way?
Yeah. I mean, around my area, it's all sand mines. They get the full-time job, but that's only going to last 3 years. And then what are they going to do after that? We need something that's more available to be a lifetime job full-time.
Thank you, Pia, for your call. Ron in Rice Lake. Hi.
How you doing?
All right, Ron. How are you?
Not too bad. My comment is, I'm 60, but the future is in front of us, and I don't understand why we don't have the future of manufacturing jobs here, you know, for solar, wind, everywhere. We should have wind generators for every household, you know, but there's no one to make anything like that, and oil companies won't allow it. So that's just my comment.
So you would be in favor, I don't want to put words in your mouth, for government to help stimulate jobs in green energy.
Right. Like they did back after, during the Depression, Wisconsin is full of trees that were planted by, the work
WPA.
They had. And now, we don't need to plant trees, but we need to plant a future instead of looking back and forward, back 40 years at some other president, the way he did things,
All right, Ron, thanks so much for your call. We have lines open. How are you doing in the past 5 years since the collapse of the American economy? Are things better? Do you think things will be better in the next year? 800-486-8685. Oh, one of the buttons fell off my machine here. Hold on. 800-486-8655 is the number for you to call. And let's go to Lynn in Eau Claire. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
Things have not gotten better up here for us in Eau Claire, our family personally. I think that in the last 5 years, there has been way too much polarization, finger-pointing, blaming. And we're all in the same leaky boat together. I believe I come from a long history. My history is rife with union. My great-grandfather was massacred at Latimer. We need our unions strengthened because it's our unions. Our unions speak for us all. I mean, you got a five-day work week, thank a union. Education, benefits, vacations, thank a union. We're not the villain. There's no villain. There's no heroes. We're in this together. And as it is now, my husband's 62, I'm 58. I don't see retirement ever happening, but we have too many people dependent upon us.
Thanks, Lynn, very much for your thoughts. Chris in Oakdale, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
All right, how are you?
Pretty good.
Good.
Yeah, I've just kind of been listening to your show. I just wanted to make a few comments. You know, I think one of the main problems is, you know, somebody asked earlier about the voters, and I really think it is the populace that is allowing a lot of this to happen. You know, people, I see it, you know, in my relationships. You know, I'm college educated, graduate school, this and that, but I come from kind of a blue collar background, and you know, I see the people that are making, you know, 60, 70, 80, 100,000, 150,000 a year, and you know, they think they're these you know, rich fat cat Republicans, and they vote for the Republicans, and the guys that are making less, you know, they vote Democrat, and the population is really just allowing itself to be divided and conquered. You know, all these people, even people that make $150,000, you know, the way they live, the way they're extended, you know, they're one illness, they're one layoff, you know, they're a couple months of income away from the soup, you know, the soup kitchen, and they're acting like they're a Rockefeller. And I just think it's kind of ridiculous. I think the people as a whole need to get together. These corporations, even in the recession, were showing record profits. You know, the oil companies, the utility companies, even the retail companies are showing record profits, and wages are stagnant. You know, it's not that they can't afford health care. It's that, you know, they don't want to. They're, you know, they're paying these CEOs, you know, hundreds of times more than the workers. You don't find that anywhere else in the world.
All right, Chris, thank you very much for your comments. Let's go to Jenny in Sauk City. Hi, Jenny.
Hi. I just want to say I'm almost 70. I'm never going to be able to retire. I don't have the smartphones and so on like people talk about. $60,000, I would be rich. I can't go to the doctor because I can't afford all my co-pays. And I just, when people say things are getting better, I don't see it. I sometimes have trouble buying food. I make a little over $20,000 a year. And I don't think things are getting better. We have low-wage jobs. That's what they're creating. They're not creating a livable-wage job.
Was there a time, Jenny, when you were doing better?
Oh, my goodness, yes. Oh. I would say about 10 to 15 years ago, I was doing much, much better.
Okay. Thank you so much for your call. That's probably all the time we'll have for calls this hour. Some of your calls will be pertinent, though, to the next hour when we're going to look at, historically, obviously, the past informs the present. So we'll be speaking with the author of The Rich Don't Always Win, The Forgotten Triumph Over Plutocracy That Created the American Middle Class, 1900 to 1970. There was a time not that long ago when we had a thriving middle class in this country. When and why? The focus of next hour. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and KP Whaley, who produced this program. Thanks to Matt Taibbi from Rolling Stones and to Carol Doherty from the Pew Research Center for the People and the Press for being our guests this hour. And thanks to you for calling with your thoughts and opinions. News is coming up. We'll return.